When Nahant Marsh near Davenport was drained and excavated, more than 140 tons of lead was removed. 15 years later, the marsh is a beautiful, thriving wetland. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we'll explore the history and resurrection of Nahant Marsh. I'll talk with Bryant Ritter, Nahant Marsh facilitator, Kathy Wine, director of River Action, and two board members who witnessed the transformation of Nahant firsthand. Mary Skopek, research geologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, will also be here. We'll talk about the challenges facing wetlands across the state of Iowa. Join our conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Nahant Marsh is a 265-acre natural area in southwest Davenport. Just 15 years ago, this beautiful, thriving wetland was an environmental disaster, a dead zone. Today, we'll talk about the history of this area and the reconstruction of Nahant Marsh. Later in the hour, we'll talk about the challenges facing wetlands across the state. With me now is Bryant Ritter. He is Nahant Marsh facilitator. Hi, Bryant.
Hello, Charity. How are you?
Good. Thank you for being here today. And Kathy Wine is also with us. She's director of River Action. Hello, Kathy.
Hello, Charity.
And Bryant, let's start with a little bit of the history of this area. This marsh is in Davenport, but I know that this is an area that has been through a lot of iterations in its history.
Well, that's right. Yeah. One of the earliest settlements in Scott County was actually here. It was a small town called Rockingham that for a while was actually bigger than Davenport and was this thriving town. And the reason it was even established here was because it was right across from the mouth of the Rock River, right on the Mississippi River. So strategically, it was a really important place. Unfortunately, you know, several floods kind of put an end to that place. And by about 1847, it was gone. And then a little later, a town called Fishertown appeared in this area, and it was called Fishertown because of the massive catfish that they were pulling out of the river. They were reporting pulling out 150 to 175-pound catfish out of the river in this area at that time. And once again, the flooding and other things, just sort of the town just sort of disappeared. And then finally, in sometime in the early 1900s, a town called Nahant popped up in this area, and it was a rail stop and a kind of a port for the steamboats that were going up and down the river. And that area was actually kind of known as Notorious Nahant because of all the crimes and things. The famous gangster John Looney had some of his largest establishments there, and all the crime that went along with Prohibition. And that sort of faded away, and eventually the city of Davenport kind of grew into this area, and we are where we are today. So,
and give me an idea of how this marsh fits into the larger wetland area and into the Mississippi River watershed.
Well, for one, this is the largest urban wetland on the upper Mississippi River. It's actually part of a larger wetland complex that makes up about 550 acres down here. And we currently own and protect about 265 acres of that. But it's connected to the river, and it's really a release valve for the river. So when the river starts to rise, it's a place for this floodwater to go. And historically, all of these areas, you know, along the Mississippi River and all of our large rivers, we had places like this for floodwater to go to. Unfortunately, a large number of these wetlands are gone now. They've been destroyed, and so that obviously has an impact on flooding and water quality and a lot of other things.
Well, a little bit later in the hour, we're going to talk more about how this area got to be as polluted as it was. But Kathy, I know you can't stay with us very long, so I want to kind of start in the middle of that story back in 1995 with River Action getting involved with Nahant Marsh and writing a plan to save this marsh. What was it like in 95, 96?
Well, yes, that's right. We did have a committee working on a master plan for it, which it did result in one being completed in 1998 and adopted by the city of Davenport. We knew that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife in around 1995 had told the sportsmen's club there at the time that they had to cease and desist all shooting, and they were depositing some lead into the marsh, which was poisonous to waterfowl. And with that action, in 2 years, that property went up for sale. So right after our master plan was done, we realized there's an opportunity to work on acquiring it. And we used the Iowa Natural Heritage Foundation and their resources, and along with the city and the EPA, worked out an agreement for cleaning up the lead on 13 acres of the marsh.
And this is kind of an unusual thing for the EPA to get involved when it was declared a Superfund site, and it's an unusual Superfund site. Why did the EPA get involved?
Yes, in their 25-year history, they had never had a program where they endorsed the cleanup and then basically paid for it. But because they saw the need for education at this site, River Action and the master plan had determined this was a wonderful site for research and for an education center. So we committed to the funding of refurbishing the clubhouse into a lab and a classroom. We contributed for 3 years all the funding for a naturalist at the time. The city agreed to hold it in perpetuity for conservation purposes and education purposes only. And with those elements in the plan, and the Sportsman Club, I should add, agreed not to take any assets from the sale, but to just ask the EPA to relieve them of any liability for the lead. So with those three things coming together, and a very creative attorney in this Region 7 EPA office, we had an agreement, and that's how it went forward. And it was never done before, and we're really proud of it. And they have, and as well, said it was one of their most successful Superfund site cleanups.
And to clean up this area, you've mentioned the lead a couple of times, but just saying that there was lead in the water, I don't think gives us the idea of how incredibly polluted this land was. There was a lot of lead in the water, right?
Well, there was, and they were finding the waterfowl were ingesting it and dying. And so that is why they had to dredge and go through a $2 million cleanup of that 13 acres in a sedge meadow and in some of the open water there and get that out.
140 tons of it.
Mm-hmm.
And to clean it out, it sounds like they basically had to entirely destroy it.
No, that wasn't the case. It just basically made the marsh a foot deeper there. They had to take out the lead and the water, soils there, and they encapsulated it, and with that were able to take it to a landfill. And it basically, the marsh was good after that.
Okay, but they had to drain it and dredge it, basically.
Yes, they had to do some... I can't remember the name of that process. Maybe Brian can, but when they encircle the area that needed to be cleaned up and drain that part, yes, it had to be done before the soils could be removed and the lead.
And Brian, when did you come into this process?
Well, actually, I got involved down here in 2007. Eastern Iowa Community Colleges came on as the agency that is in charge of education down here, and I was working for them at the time, and they approached me, and I thought, what a cool opportunity. This is such an awesome place to come to work. And so I was familiar with the place before that and familiar with all the history and the cleanup that occurred. And, I stepped in at a time when we were still sort of actively restoring the marsh, and we're still in that phase where we're replanting and dealing with invasive species and things of that nature. But you know, over the last 6 years that I've been here, I've seen the quality improve. We've seen new species come in here that we hadn't recorded here for a long time or even never recorded here, and that's really exciting to be a part of that.
And Kathy, since I have to let you go in just a moment, what is River Action's continuing role with Nahant Marsh?
Yes, we have been the sort of the major fundraiser for the marsh over the years, raising the money to purchase it originally and lots of hundreds of thousands of dollars since then to help with the restoration. And we continue to administer the workings of the Nahant Marsh Education Board of Directors and some of those fundraising efforts, as well as the financial aspects of the marsh.
It must feel awfully good to be able to go to the marsh now in 2013 and think about what it was just 15 years ago.
Oh, it is. It's so alive now. Brian does such a fabulous job with the community outreach to the public, as well as the colleges and universities and schools, the high schools and grade schools. It's a very lively place. It's a wonderful place for recreation and education, and it can only get better with this effort. There are challenges, but we're meeting them.
Well, Kathy, thank you so much for being with me today.
Thank you.
Kathy Wine is director of River Action. And Brian, we're going to take a short break here. You're going to stay with us. But before we get to the break, I've mentioned that this is a 265-acre natural area in southwest Davenport. You mentioned that it's part of a larger wetland area. For people who aren't familiar with Davenport and with this area, where is it in conjunction with the city?
Well, actually, our property is dissected by I-280. So we're right next to I-280, Highway 22, and the Mississippi River. So our land is kind of sandwiched in between those areas. And, you know, we are surrounded by all kinds of things down here. We've got industry, we've got a rail yard and interstates, and still some agriculture and residential, but the remarkable thing is that life is still thriving down here. So southwest Davenport, I-280 is the best way to get to us.
Are there people from Davenport who are still surprised to learn that Nahant Marsh is in the city? Is there?
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, we go out and do outreach throughout the community and talk about Nahant Marsh, and they think this is some foreign place that's hours away, and we tell them that it's right in their backyard, and they're just so amazed. And when they come out here, it's incredible, because it's like you're stepping into a completely different land. It doesn't feel like you're in the city anymore when you're here. So
we're going to take a short break. My guest right now is Brian Ritter, Nahant Marsh facilitator, Nahant Marsh in Davenport. And you can find out more about this story in a new documentary called Resurrecting the Wetlands, the story of Nahant Marsh, which will have its premiere on April 4th at the Putman Museum. It will be shown along with Mississippi Tales of a River Rat with Kenny Salway. And Kenny Salway will be a special guest at that event as well. Again, that's coming up on April 4th. Coming up in just a few minutes, we'll talk with a couple of board members of Nahant Marsh who watched this transformation firsthand. And we'll also take a broader look at wetlands in Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the transformation of Nahant Marsh in southwest Davenport. It's a 265-acre natural area, and it's gone through a couple of transformations in its history, from being a natural thriving wetland to being basically a dead zone merely 15 years ago. And now it has been reconstructed and again is a healthy wetland that attracts wildlife and visitors from all over the place. With me right now is Brian Ritter. He is Nahant Marsh facilitator. And now we're going to talk to a couple of different Nahant Marsh board members. First joining us is Jim Van Fossen. He is a member of the Nahant Marsh board and a retired police captain, and he's lived in this area for all of his life. Hello, Jim.
I'm here.
Hi. Thank you so much for being here today. And I wonder if we could go back and talk about your childhood. I know that Nahant Marsh was a place that you visited a lot as a kid. Tell me a little bit about it.
Well, my name is Jim Van Foss. I'm 72 years old. I'm the old guy in the block. I was born and raised in the west end of Davenport with the Mississippi River in my front yard. and the Neat Marsh in my back. As a kid in the 40s and 50s, we didn't have parks and playgrounds, but I had the marsh to explore. And I knew every beaver dam, muskrat house, morel mushroom, or wild asparagus patch in the place. And when I was a kid, I trapped muskrat, mink, and hunted ducks and geese in the marsh. And then in the 60s and 70s, things started to change. The parts of the marsh were turned into a dump site. There was a trap range out there, filled the marsh with lead shot, killing the migratory birds. There was a motorcycle club. And actually, the marsh really started to die. Then the federal government, with state, city, and the leadership of River Action, things really started to change. With the help of community colleges, the colleges, public and private schools, individuals, companies, the marsh was started to be cleaned of trash. They removed invasive species. The lead shot was removed, and the marsh really came back to life. And I'm lucky because the marsh is still in my backyard. I live on Enchanted Island, which is about 2 miles away. And it's a place now. I'm the past president, and I'm so fortunate to have been involved in the number of years that I have been. It's a place now in the west end of Davenport that's really a jewel. It's a place where you can take your family, walk the marsh paths. You can see all the migratory birds. You can see river otters. It's a place you can go for free and spend an afternoon or a morning and really enjoy. And it's what's really nice about it, it's right here in Davenport.
Jim, back in the 60s and 70s, when people were dumping trash in the marsh, when the shooting range was there and filling it up with lead, did you think much about that transformation that was taking place?
Absolutely. There used to be, in my backyard, there was, in the marsh, there was places where there was 50 or 100 muskrat houses. And back in the 60s and 80s, you know, I mean, it reduced to 10 or 12. I mean, the wildlife just absolutely left the area for whatever reason. It was really kind of an eyesore in the west end of Davenport, and the turnaround has been amazing.
What do you think made it possible there? You know, over 90% of the wetlands in Iowa that we used to have disappeared. What do you think made it possible to bring Nahant Marsh back instead of just letting it go like so many others?
I think it really was the vision of River Action. It was the people there that had the interests of the river and the river areas, the marshes and the backwaters and things that, as a kid when I was growing up, I remember off of the river there was bayous and bays that are now not there. There was the marshes had all just dried up and are gone.
Well, Jim, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Well, I appreciate the phone call, and River Action is a place to take your family for sure.
All right. Jim Van Fossen is a member of the Nahant Marsh Board. He's also a retired police captain, and he's lived in the area his entire life. Curtis Lundy's also with us. He's also a Nahant Marsh Board member. And Curtis, I know that you've spent the last 8 to 10 years on the board, so you weren't there when it was a Superfund site, but as work has continued on reconstruction of the marsh, what have you seen as far as the transformation goes?
Well, I've seen a lot. When I came on the board, say 8 years ago, I was appointed by the mayor of Davenport, and I had never been there before, like many of the people in the area. But when I went down there, oh boy, what have we here? And it just knocked my socks off.
Well, what did you see that first time that amazed you so much?
Well, when you drive in, first there's a lovely prairie, you know, the tall, big blue stem and Indian grass. And beyond that is a wooded, kind of a flooded woods. And then finally you get to where the educational center is, and there's a huge pond with all kinds of colorful flowers and grasses around it. And then it goes beyond that, and then you get into trails that lead you. I mean, you think you're, I don't know where you're at, but you're not, you are in the city of Davenport, but you don't think you are. So it was just a wealth that was unknown to me, and I know to a lot of other people. At that particular time, we were limping along. We had just lost our naturalist, and anyway, and so the Friends of Nahant, which should be saluted, they kind of, a group of like 8 to 10 people, just volunteers, kind of held things together with the help of River Action and some of the other groups. But anyway, until Eastern Iowa Community College and Brian got involved, then that kind of stepped things up. Then we had Hope again as a board. And all of a sudden, in the last 5 years, or whatever it is, Brian, correct me if I'm wrong, it has grown from limping to, wow, we are, Brian's having to turn people away as far as the educational center. We're looking at a expansion project of the Ed Center. And Brian's been an expert at getting AmeriCorps and working with the city to get interns in the colleges and universities to all pitch in and do some natural resource work. So it has been a real game changer in the last 8 years, and we're just kind of getting started.
Well, and obviously, the lead pollution was a very serious problem in Nahant Marsh, and when the EPA got involved and got that cleaned up, that was a huge step forward. But it sounds to me like the marsh was still at risk after that, because investing time, resources, manpower, money into reconstruction of a marshland like this isn't something that's happening all over the place.
No, I mean, like in the movie that I hope some of the listeners can see either next week or thereafter, Bob Bryant says, who is our resource manager, if we're not paying attention to it all the while, the willows, the canary grass, regrass, the garlic mustard, everything will close in and you know, turn it into a, you know, a monoculture of unwanted. But as it is, we're fighting hard to keep it pretty much to the biodiversity up, and we have reason to be proud, but a lot more reason to work harder too. But yes, it would not go the way left to nature, so to speak. It wouldn't keep its diversity and be the happy home for over 400 different types of plants and animals that it is now.
What are some of the species, and Brian, I'd love for you to jump in here too. What are some of the species that you have seen in Nahant Marsh in the last few years that have most surprised you?
Well, for instance, we have a rare turtle here. It's threatened in Iowa. It's endangered in Illinois, and it's proposed for federal listing. It's called a Blanding's turtle. And we've had a researcher, Mick Holgerson, over the last 3 years, just doing a general turtle survey and tracking these Blanding's turtles. And we've been able to find at least 15 of them in here, which is sounds like a small population, but that's probably one of the largest populations in Davenport and, you know, one of the larger populations in eastern Iowa. And sandhill cranes, which were not typically seen in eastern Iowa, have the last 2 years have been nesting here. And we just yesterday saw the pair kind of circling and going to the same place where they nested last year. So that's a great sign. And a lot of rare plants, too. As Curtis mentioned, we've documented over 400 different species of plants alone in here. And rare things like rose turtlehead, which is another protected species in Iowa. And so I'm always thrilled to come to work because we never know what we're going to see down here. It's always so exciting. Just yesterday I saw a northern harrier, which is another endangered hawk that's found here in Iowa. I just saw one right in front of the education center when I came to work. So
I think a lot of people are somewhat familiar, at least, with the process that you have to go through to reconstruct a prairie as far as reintroducing these native grasses, native species. In Nahant Marsh, you mentioned these rare plants. Did you have to reintroduce these plants, or were they still there over all these years?
Well, luckily, there was still a seed source for them there. And the main area, like Kathy had mentioned, about 13 acres plus was disturbed here during the the lead cleanup and things like that. And those areas were had to be replanted, but we're seeing stuff show up that we never planted, and it just goes to show us that, you know, if you give nature a chance, things, if there's a seed source or if there's some roots left or whatever, things will come back. And, you know, possibly the other thing that's happening, too, is since we're associated with the river, every time the Mississippi floods, whatever seeds happen to be in the river come in here. And sometimes those are good things and sometimes they're not such good things. But we keep a close monitor on that.
Earlier, you mentioned how there were marshes like these all up and down the Mississippi River and that they played an important role in absorbing floodwaters in times when the river is high. Does Nahant Marsh play a role in protecting Davenport?
Well, possibly in protecting Davenport, but also the people downstream, Muscatine and other cities, because we take on just a tremendous volume, billions of gallons of water flow in here during a flood. And it's just remarkable. Before the river even hits flood stage, it starts to back up into the marsh. And really, that's kind of, you know, one of the vitally important functions of this wetland. Like I said, the issue is we've either filled in most of these wetlands or we've levied off these areas so the water can't naturally flow back into these places like they did at one time. So, you know, as we've seen the last few years, we've had some pretty serious flooding in Iowa, and certainly a part of that is probably due to the loss of places like this.
Curtis, you mentioned the constant struggle to keep invasive species at bay in Nahant Marsh and, of course, in natural places everywhere. What kind of manpower do you have to keep the garlic mustard out and all of the other invasive species?
Well, limited, and Brian can probably speak more specifically, but he's attracted AmeriCorps to come through a couple times during the year, and they're a big help. Different programs with the city are available, and we get interns from the colleges. But we have a cleanup in May, and part of that is invasive species, and we have our friends group religiously come out on Saturdays and hack away, cutting down trees or snipping willows or whatever types of plants. So it's we would like to shore up or expand our resource management, but right now it's kind of get what we can get done with very limited resources.
Is that a battle you can ever win, or is that one you just have to constantly fight in an area like this?
I would say that's something we have to constantly be vigilant about. You know, unfortunately, you know, if you look around Iowa and really look around the world, we have these tiny islands now of nature that are left surrounded by all kinds of human pressures. The idea of taking a hands-off approach, really, I think most biologists would agree that really doesn't work anymore. We, especially in such a small, relatively small preserve like this, we have to be on constant alert for these invasive species. And luckily, we've been pretty good over the last few years at seeing problems as they come in and attacking them. Like, for instance, purple loosestrife, which is all over the Mississippi River. After the 2008 floods, we saw a couple individual purple loosestrife plants. We killed them immediately, kept kind of watch for them, and we haven't seen them since. We've been able to keep it out of here. But, you know, if you sort of drop your guard, you know, this place could easily get overrun. We're also
Brian, make sure and tell Charity about the goats.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, we're going to use some novel ways to deal with invasives. Like, for instance, we're contracting with a rent-a-goat firm this year out of southwest Wisconsin, and they're going to bring in 50 to 70 goats for a period of time this summer to help us deal with some of these invasives. So whether we use humans or machines or, in this case, goats, we're using it in an experimental way too. You know, we'll obviously collect data to see what works and what doesn't, and take a multi-prong approach to dealing with this ongoing problem.
And can the goats distinguish between the invasive species and the native species?
Well, we hope so, but in some of our areas, you know, most of the areas are in really good shape, but we do have some areas that are just almost completely full of invasive plants. Willows and reeds canary grass and Phragmites, which is a giant reed grass, and that's about all we have in a couple acres, and so we'll just put the goats in there and let them clean house and then start from
fresh.
Scratch.
Oh, that's a very unusual approach. Curtis, I need to let you go, and Brian's going to stay with us. But before I let you go, Curtis, if someone was to visit Nahant Marsh, what do you think is the best time to go and the best thing to see?
Well, we're open kind of 8:30 till 5 most days, but on Saturday mornings it's from 8:30 to noon for sure, and our Frings group is there. One favorite place is we just finished a viewing station for birds that goes right out onto the pond, and you can see a lot of birds and turtles that way, and you walk through the woods, and then keep walking. There's a little vernal pond for the frogs in maybe a month or so. I don't know. It just tickles, I think, a soul to walk through the prairies and then to see the big pond and to look back in the woods and the different birds and sounds that you hear there. So I don't think you can go wrong.
Curtis, thank you so much.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. Curtis Lundy is a Nahant Marsh board member. We'll talk more about Nahant Marsh in a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today we're talking about Nahant Marsh in southwest Davenport. Just 15 years ago, this wetland was an environmental disaster, full of lead, unable to support wildlife after a big EPA Superfund cleanup and meticulous work to reconstruct the marsh. It is now a thriving, beautiful, natural area. With me is Brian Ritter. He is Nahant Marsh facilitator. It's also an educational center. Brian spends a lot of time talking with young people and many people about the marsh and natural areas in Iowa. And also joining us now is Mary Skopek, research geologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. Hello, Mary.
Hi, Charity. Thank you for having me on your show.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And we're going to focus on Nahant for a little while longer, and then we're going to broaden the conversation to talk about wetlands across the state of Iowa, and we welcome you into the conversation as well at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Mary, you've been focusing a lot of your attention on Nahant Marsh over the last 6 years or so. What have you been studying?
Well, I work with the Iowa Water Program. It's a DNR program that trains regular citizens how to do basic water quality monitoring. And as part of that, we look at the chemistry of things like streams and wetlands, but we also look at the biology. And in particular, when we go out to Nahant and we do a training out there, we're looking at what kind of insects and little critters live in that marsh. And when we look at that, we look for things that are tolerant to pollution that would indicate that maybe we have a lot of pollution. But then we also look for things that are less tolerant to pollution. And certain organisms cannot stand much pollution. And if we find them, that's a pretty good indication that the water quality is good and that the overall ecosystem is healthy. And so we worked with Brian on a number of occasions to take citizens out there, and we've recently been working with teachers to bring them out there and train them how to do the basic testing so that they can hopefully bring their classes out there as well and use Nahant Marsh or other wetlands in their backyard as a teaching laboratory for students to really understand biology on a level that is exciting and interesting to them.
And when you look at the water in Nahant Marsh, what does it tell you about the marsh?
Well, and I think you've heard about it already, but what we see is that the water quality is actually pretty good when we look for things like how clear is the water. We were just out there, gosh, I guess a couple of weeks ago at the beginning of March, and it was cold, and there was still ice on the marsh, but the water is clear. And that's a good sign that we don't have a lot of sediment or dirt in the marsh. We see nutrient levels that are relatively low and indicate that we don't have a lot of pollution from farm fields or from runoff from cities into the marsh anymore. We didn't test for lead because we don't have that capability right now. But we did see what I thought was outstanding water quality. And when we go in the summer, we see excellent biology. We're seeing dragonflies and damselflies in their larval stage and their nymph stage, again, indicating that the marsh is on the rebound.
When you look at Nahant Marsh, and I, like I said, I want to broaden the conversation to other wetlands in Iowa, but this seems like a really amazing story. Are there other wetlands in Iowa that have had this kind of resurrection like Nahant?
I would say Nahant is a fairly unique situation because it had it was an urban wetland. It was really stressed by the lead shot that was in there. So we don't see the same sort of pressure in many of our other wetlands. They tend to be more in agricultural settings, and their pressures tend to be things like high levels of nutrient loading from farm fields, or they've been drained, and so they no longer exist because of the fact that they've been drained, or perhaps from pesticides. So Nahant is unique in that regard, but we do see wetland restoration occurring in different parts of the state, again, showing very positive results that if you really start to address the pressures on that wetland, you can see amazing biology rebound, and we've seen great successes in the Union Slough Complex in north central Iowa, wetlands around the Okoboji area, around the Great Lakes, that, again, when those areas are restored, rebound quite fantastically.
And again, I think a lot more people in Iowa are familiar with prairie reconstruction. For whatever reason, that's been higher profile in the past couple of decades. Is there, when you compare the two processes, is there something about a wetland reconstruction that really sets it apart from the prairie reconstruction process?
I think there is, and what I would say, it's about getting the water right. So by the nature of a wetland, you need to have water. And you can't just fill a wetland with water and walk away, and I think you've heard about that already. Wetlands go through periods of dry and wet, and so having that dynamic water process is really important. That at times the wetland is more full, and you fill that wetland with water, and at times to let it dry, and if not completely, a little bit around the margins of the wetland being drier, helps to keep back some of those invasive species, provides niches and areas for different types of plants and animals to live. And so bringing back that dynamic hydrology, as we would call it, is really important to wetlands. And things like the drought of 2012 really help with that. There were periods of drought with these wetlands through millennia. And so recreating that either artificially or naturally is really important to that wetland health. But if you treat it like a swimming pool and just fill it with water, that's not the best thing for that wetland, and certain species can't establish in that sort of situation.
There are a lot of different types of wetlands in Iowa. Are there some kinds that are easier to restore than others?
There are. If we think about in north central Iowa, we have what we would call prairie pothole wetlands. These are areas it was a part of the state that was last glaciated about 12 to 14,000 years ago. And those wetlands are just depressions in the landscape. They were largely tiled and drained for farmland. To bring those back, if we cut the tile, the water will start to seep back into those wetlands. They'll get some groundwater flow as well as rainwater. And as Brian indicated, if the seed bank is there, they will be able to be restored pretty effectively. There are wetlands that we would call fens that tend to form on the slope, hill slopes. And usually it's a groundwater-fed wetland that when we've destroyed those, they don't seem to come back as well because it's a lot harder to bring the water back to those fens. And they have such rare species of plants that those seem to be harder to bring back. So from a from a wetland protection standpoint, we are concerned about losing fens because we can't restore them, whereas the prairie pothole, or even as Nahant is, wetlands along riparian or stream corridors, again, if we can reconnect them to the stream, if we can make sure the water gets back in them, they will actually recover pretty well.
I'm talking with Mary Skopek, research geologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources, and Brian Ritter, Nahant Marsh facilitator in Davenport. And Mary, you mentioned the floods of 2012, and of course there are the floods of 2008, and so many flooding events in Iowa over the past few decades. Has the incredible amount of flooding that we've had in the state of Iowa, has that made people more interested in wetland restoration?
I think it absolutely has made people more interested. You know, wetlands are ways to hold water back. And when we look at the floods of 2008, that water that was quickly delivered to the stream and impacted Cedar Rapids and Des Moines and other communities, if we had held those in wetlands, some of our research is suggesting that we could have reduced the peak flows. You don't get rid of a flood completely, and so floods are natural, but you can reduce the magnitude of that flood. You can perhaps take the damages down an order of magnitude for communities that, instead of having billions of dollars in damage, maybe a significantly less amount of damage if you have wetlands. And so I think people are interested for that. We're also seeing a lot of interest in wetlands in terms of their nutrient processing capabilities. So oftentimes people think of wetlands as the kidneys of the ecosystem, that they process nutrients, they take up nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus. And we have obviously a lot of nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus in our streams. There's a lot of attention about Iowa's delivery of those nutrients to the Gulf of Mexico and the dead zone in the Gulf. And so there's a lot of interest in trying to restore those wetlands to help really ramp up the nutrient processing, and people talking about, well, what would the impact be if we restored 10% of our landscape to wetlands, and if we did it in a certain geographic part of the state. And so I think sort of the 1-2 punch of both flooding and nutrients, we're seeing a tremendous increase in interest in restoration for those reasons.
Brian, I know a lot of the education that you do is with kids who are coming out to learn about the wetland and to learn about Nahant Marsh. Do you talk with them a lot about how Nahant Marsh and other wetlands interact with the rest of the water system in Iowa?
Oh, definitely. I mean, that's a huge part of it, is just showing our interconnectedness in all things. And like Mary said, you know, wetlands are really the kidneys of the earth, and you know, without them, we start to see water quality decline in our rivers and streams. And so we definitely hit on that point. We also talk at great length with the kids that come out here about the importance of wetlands for wildlife, because, you know, wetlands are one of the most productive types of ecosystems on the planet. And a wide variety of plants and animals and other things make their home either all year long, or at least part of their life cycle spent here in these wetlands. Without wetlands, you know, we lose our fish populations, we lose our bird populations, plants, and a whole lot of other things. So whether you're a hunter or fisherman or whatever, wetlands are just critically important for a lot of reasons.
Have you found that, I know that you haven't been there too long, but you went through the floods of 2008 while you were at Nahant Marsh. Have you found that there is an attitude that's changing among the people who come there, who want to talk about wetlands?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I think we're becoming more and more aware that wetlands are just play such a critical role in flood mitigation and other things. And so, you know, we just actually created some new signage about flooding and how it impacts Nahant Marsh, but also why places like Nahant are important to deal with those floods. And so we're seeing people's attitudes change ever so slowly, but it definitely hits home when you can come down to this place during a flood and see that this whole basin is just filled with water. But
in your efforts to educate, are you making efforts to reach out beyond the people who might be wanting to bring their classrooms to Nahant Marsh?
Well, definitely, and that's one of the reasons why we made this documentary about the marsh. that not everybody can get down here, and you know, we realize that, and so hopefully this documentary will provide people with an opportunity to educate themselves about the value of wetlands and the story of Nahant Marsh. And the other impetus for making the film is that we want to inspire other communities and other places to sort of do the same. You know, there's plenty of areas that could be restored, whether it's a wetland or a prairie or woodland, and you know, the value of doing such a thing is just so incredible to our citizens here in Scott County and really throughout the state. So,
Mary, in Nahant Marsh, there was this terrible problem with lead, and it was largely because of a shooting range that was putting lead shot into the water. Although waterfowl had been hunted in Iowa for many, many years with lead shot, is lead poisoning a problem in a lot of our waterways in the state?
Well, that's an interesting question. I would say that it is perhaps understudied and that we haven't looked at the lead shot issue. There are certainly discussions right now in the legislature and within the Natural Resources Commission about whether lead shot should be banned or not. You know, the thing about lead, and Nahant's a great example of that, is once it's in the environment, it's very expensive to get it out of the environment. And I don't know how much money was spent dredging out Nahant, which is a relatively isolated area.
$2 million.
Yeah, and so if you took that and really took it over hundreds of thousands of acres and thought about trying to take shot out of other areas, I think that the approach to think about is whether we can find alternatives that prevent that shot from getting in the landscape in the first place. And again, we haven't perhaps studied it as much as we perhaps need to, but I think it is something that people are starting to think about and trying to maybe move away from lead shot.
We talked about how attitudes are changing because we have had so much flooding in Iowa in the past. But at the same time, with incredibly high corn prices, we have seen a lot of the grasslands, a lot of the trees along waterways pulled out in the last few years to put in a few more rows of corn or soybeans. What do you consider to be the greatest threat to our waterways and wetlands in Iowa right now, Mary?
Well, I think you've hit on it. Certainly, there's a lot of pressure and competition for that land, and you know, I think wetlands are no different than the woodlands and the grasslands that people would like to make those productive, both from an agricultural standpoint, but also from an urban standpoint. As Nahant Marsh experienced, people like to build or fill those wetlands so that they could be close to the rivers, and we're seeing pressures from that definitely. It's sort of that delicate balance between wanting folks to be able to produce food and fiber on the landscape, but then also maintaining enough of those natural areas so that we have ecological integrity for things like birds that are migrating across the country, and so that we have turtles and amphibians and good water quality. And that balance is definitely a challenge. In the agricultural areas, we also see our wetlands being stressed by things like pesticides and fungicides that are applied to cropland, but it's impossible to pinpoint application of those. So sometimes those chemicals drift into our wetlands unintentionally. When we looked at wetlands in North Central Iowa, we found atrazine, for example, which is a corn herbicide, in nearly all of those wetlands. It wasn't being applied to those wetlands. It was just an unanticipated consequence. And so, you know, we do know that they are threatened by the pressure to drain them, as well as just agricultural chemicals or things that people are applying to the landscape ending up in those wetlands.
Mary Skopik, thank you so much.
Thank you, Charity.
Mary Skopik is research geologist with the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. And Brian Ritter, thank you.
Thank you for having us today.
Brian Ritter, Nahant Marsh facilitator, and the new documentary, Resurrecting the Wetlands, The Story of Nahant Marsh, premieres on April 4th with two showtimes at 5:30 and 7:30 at the Putnam Museum in Davenport. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese, Emily Woodbury, Sarah Bowden, and Ben Stanton. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. Our theme music was composed and performed by the River Monks. I'm Charity Nebbe. Tomorrow on the show, it's Horticulture Day. Talk of Iowa is a production of Iowa Public Radio News.